inspiration is something that just hits us suddenly. Maybe we overheard a great conversation, won tickets to a great musical, or met someone new with a fresh perspective, something that ignited or reignited a spark within us. Spontaneous inspiration is one of the greatest surprises that can happen in your day. But if it doesn't, don't be discouraged. I've become a big believer in scheduling inspiration. For me, that means proactively orchestrating events that will make me feel inspired. I don't want my hustle to rely solely on spontaneous events, so I take matters into my own hands. My daily to-do list includes items like clear inbox, read movie script, conference call, make video, send creative pitch, and then at the very end of the list will be a shining gem that says, watch The Walking Dead. Anyone who's known me for a while might laugh at that because I'm always the one to say, I don't have time to watch shows. I'm too busy creating my own. And it's true. I am busy creating my own content, but watching shows and movies has become part of my work. Hashtag blessed life. I discovered their value last year when I had my wisdom teeth removed. Like most people, I was a useless chipmunk high on painkillers trying to distract myself from the hell that was my current life. I took the opportunity to finally listen to my friends and Twitter, I mean, I guess that might be the same thing, and start watching Game of Thrones. It was a strange idea to me to sit in one place for several hours and mindlessly stare at a show on a screen, but I did it to ease my pain. In exactly 60 minutes, I was hooked. The storyline was one I'd never encountered before. The costumes and set design were so extravagant, and the dialogue made me want to shed tears of joy. Want to see a grown woman cry? Let Emilia Clarke drop a one-liner about girl power. Watching Game of Thrones inspired me to think about my own content differently. Suddenly, I had new ideas. I was paying more attention to one-liners in my own script, and I was increasing the production value of my shoots. Watching the show wasn't just helping me relax. It was also helping me become better at my craft. Once I flew through all the seasons, like most of the population, I had major Game of Thrones withdrawal. That's when I decided to fill the void with The Walking Dead. I thought, there's no way a show about zombies could inspire me the way Game of Thrones did. I've seen a million zombie movies. To my surprise, I was completely wrong. The Walking Dead inspired me in a completely different way, with unique character development, plot twists, and tension that provoked extreme anxiety in me. Watching this show not only got the wheels spinning in my creative mind, but created brand new wheels that hadn't been there before. After The Walking Dead came Stranger Things, and well, I watched that in 2 days. In my defense, at the time of recording this audiobook, there's only one season, so don't judge me too harshly. As expected, Stranger Things inspired me to start thinking about sci-fi themes and supernatural abilities. I immediately wanted to feature more children in my videos because apparently they're all more talented than me. And if these shows didn't directly inspire me to think about content differently, they definitely inspired my jokes. While I was watching these shows, I'd reference them constantly in my videos, and my audience loved it. They enjoyed knowing that I was as invested in the characters as they were. And more than anything, they loved knowing that we both watched the same shows. It made my content that much more relatable. In addition to watching shows, I also schedule inspiration by taking breaks from my work and using that time to watch interviews of people I admire. If I'm struggling to write a comedy script, I'll watch an interview with Rebel Wilson or Amy Schumer. If I'm struggling to write lyrics, I'll watch an interview with Nicki Minaj or Drake. I think there's something so inspirational about hearing other people's experiences and what drives them. It's almost like they're lending you some of their fuel or giving you a boost with spiritual jumper cables. Hearing someone so accomplished talk about their struggles and successes has definitely become crucial inspirational fuel for me. Therefore, I make time to watch a decent number of interviews every week. It's my version of taking a break in a meaningful way. A productive break, if you will. Sometimes we go too long with our gas light on and our car stops in the middle of the road. Everyone is honking at you and you're just staring straight ahead in complete frustration, pretending not to hear them. Hello, I am not here by choice. It's not impossible to get your car going again, but it'll definitely take some more work. You'll have to call a tow truck or walk to the nearest gas station, buy an overpriced gas container, fill it up, and walk back to your car. You can expect the same thing to happen when you've been hustling for a long time without refueling. When I was planning my first tour, I spent every waking moment working on the creative for a good few weeks. One evening, I caught myself feeling dead inside, and I knew my hustle had halted on the side of the road. People were honking at me. And by people, I mean my production team, who were waiting for my final show script. I got up and walked away from my work. I headed straight to my room and zoned out for a bit. That night, I was supposed to go out with a few friends, and my brain was dreading it since I was already so completely drained of energy. I couldn't bear the thought of having to be social. Instead, I canceled my plans and spent the night watching the Beyoncé documentary. As I sat there alone, it was like Beyoncé was speaking to me, because so much of what she was saying was what I was feeling at the time, and also because I wish she was my best friend, but that's a separate situation. In tears, I watched as Queen Bee gave me all the wisdom and knowledge I needed. Through her story, I could feel my needle moving from empty to full. The next morning, I woke up with new purpose and a reignited desire to work on my tour. Lemonade was flowing through my veins. When you're sick, you get into bed and allow yourself to heal. When your hustle's not feeling well, you should prescribe it some inspiration and do the same. I canceled my plans that night because my hustle needed healing. Here are a few suggestions for what to watch to jumpstart your inspiration. These documentaries: Justin Bieber, Never Say Never; Katy Perry, Part of Me; Beyoncé, Life is But a Dream; Lily Singh, A Trip to Unicorn Island. Who put this in there? Having said all of this, I now have an electric car, so I don't deal with the nuisance of getting gas. I don't need to refuel my car, just my hustle, and I take that task very seriously. All I have to do now is remember to plug my car in and... crap. Chapter 16. Have Visions. What if every day were Christmas, and you could ask Santa for whatever you wanted in life? Sometimes you'd get what you asked for because you were nice, but other times you wouldn't because you were a naughty brat. Well, life is kind of like that, except every day isn't Christmas. It's an opportunity to hustle. And Santa doesn't exist. I was paid off to say this. Keep believing, kids. But you can still get what you ask for if you work hard enough. Every day you can close your eyes and imagine all the things you want. A boss doesn't just know what they want for Christmas. They know what they want from life. They have visions. Don't get weirded out. I'm not going to get all sci-fi on you, and I won't tell you to have visions about the future and predict horrific tragedies because the last thing we need is another Final Destination movie. We get it. You can't escape death, just like we can't escape that storyline. However, I am going to explain the importance of two types of visions: vision boards and visualization. I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard of a vision board. That's because it's not a concept I made up. It's a pretty well-known device that most people know from the book and film The Secret. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, then yes, I invented vision boards. A vision board is a piece of paper, piece of Bristol board, or a chalkboard, any surface really, that has images of all the things you want to obtain in life. The idea is to collect images that represent your goals and paste them onto a board to create a collage. Then you place the board somewhere where you will see it often, reminding you of your goals. I've made two vision boards so far in my life, and I can tell you firsthand that they have positively impacted my hustle and my mind. Here are three reasons you should have a vision board. Number one, creating a vision board gives you clarity about what your goals are. People know they have to work really hard, so they do. But sometimes they're unsure of what they're really working for. What's the goal? After all, you can't get what you want in life if you don't know what you want. Not having a clear understanding of what your goals are is like not putting an address into a GPS before driving. Something like money isn't a clear goal. How will you know if you've ever made enough money to achieve your goal of making money? Does money mean a nice tux or a private jet? Set clear goals and define them with clear images. You can't hustle toward a blurry picture because you'll never know if you've gotten there. Create a vision board and be honest about what you want. If you want a nice car, put it on there. If you want a six-pack, put it on there. If you want to travel the world, put it on there too. If you want to date Channing Tatum, same, but that might not work. Everything else though, put it on there. Now you know what you're aiming for. Number two, creating a vision board helps you to be self-aware, which, it goes without saying, is a key boss quality. Success is subjective. For some people, success means owning a yacht. For others, it means being a good parent. And still for others, it means running a 10K marathon. When you begin pasting your goals onto a board, you can have a better understanding of how you define success. Your vision board will be filled with all the things you think are important. And what you think is important is very telling. Taking a look at your vision board can often help you understand why you make the decisions you make. If you're unsure why you love to work late nights at the office even though your fiancé hates it, the picture of a CEO's desk on your vision board might be the answer. Or maybe it's the picture of a stack of money. Number 3. A vision board allows you to be constantly reminded of what you want in life. Now that you've gained clarity and self-awareness, you can motivate yourself by storing your goals in your subconscious. What better way to do that than stare at images of your goals? I keep my vision board above my bed, and sometimes, like when I'm struggling to fall asleep or I'm talking on the phone, I'm looking at my vision board without even thinking about it. That subliminal messaging to my brain does wonders. A vision board can also help you make tough decisions. If you're having a hard time making a decision about something, you have two choices and both are tempting, refer to the goals on your board and evaluate which of the two options align better with your vision. Often you will find that a tempting choice does not do anything to help you achieve your goals. It only divides your attention. Giving your vision board a glance can help you keep your eyes on the prize without getting distracted by shiny objects. I mean, we're all squirrels after all. Not to mention that... Wait, is that tinfoil? BRB. If creating just one vision board will help you become more self-aware, imagine how much you'll learn about yourself with your second vision board. You can literally track how you've grown as a person when you compare your first and second boards. What are you changing? What has become more or less important to you? My first vision board had several images of money on it, and I can't truly say that I fulfilled that goal before making my second vision board, but even still, money was not on my second one. Somewhere in between my first and second board, money became less important to me. Maybe I realized that it didn't make me as happy as the other things I had on my board, such as travel and content creation. Look at how self-aware I am! Now I can focus all my attention on travel and content creation and not chase easy money. Before you run off to create a vision board, let's talk about visualization. In my life, I've practiced both long-term and short-term visualization, depending on the situation. Both have served me well on my journey to becoming a boss. Long-term visualization is when you imagine yourself in a scenario that you hope will become a reality one day. You're not quite sure when or how it'll happen. All you know is that you want it to happen. In other words, you imagine the experience of obtaining all the things on your vision board. You can do this simply by sitting in a chair, closing your eyes, and imagining yourself signing the sales agreement for a new house. Feel free to even mimic signing your signature with your hand. Bonus points if you hold a pen. Now, by the secret's logic, that's all you'd have to do to obtain a new house. But I don't believe that. The universe might respect the law of attraction, but it respects a good hustle even more. After you're done visualizing, get up and get to work. You can also visualize with your eyes open by acting out something you want to happen and pretending it's real. Here's my favorite example. I used to desperately want to be interviewed on the radio. I would constantly hear celebrities doing plugs for radio stations while I was driving, like, "Hey, this is Usher, and you're listening to Kiss 92.5. Every time I heard one of those plugs, I would think, "Man, that's so cool, and they're so famous." So I started to imitate them. While driving in my car, I would pretend I was on the radio, and I'd say a plug out loud to myself. I must have said, "Hey, everyone, this is your girl Superwoman, and you're listening to Kiss 92.5, so keep it locked," at least 25 times to myself, before I ever got my first opportunity to do it on the radio in real life. The first time a radio host ever asked me to record a plug, I had to contain all my excitement and I was beyond prepared. Until then, I hadn't known how or when I would get there. I just knew I wanted to be on the radio. Short-term visualization is helpful when you know you are going to be doing something specific and you want to imagine how the scenario will play out. For example, before a performance, I visualize exactly what I want to happen. I close my eyes, imagine myself walking onto the stage with full energy, and see the crowd's positive reaction. Then I watch myself perform in a way that makes me proud. I see how I'm going to tell every joke, hit every bit of choreography, and nail my facial expressions. I'll even physically go through the motions with my eyes closed, so it feels like it's as real as possible. It's like a dress rehearsal for the mind and spirit. When I open my eyes and do the show for real, the goal is to simulate what I visualized. There should be no issues since, according to my brain, this is round 2. We all know the cliche, see it, believe it, achieve it. You've probably taken a screenshot of it and shared it on Instagram thinking we were really deep. I definitely have, hashtag Motivation Monday. Well, now you can actually give meaning to that quote by practicing the art of visualization. There is great power in knowing what you want. and even greater power in pretending it's already yours. Combine that with a strong work ethic, and Christmas can come more than once a year. Then you can start... Wait, sorry, what? Is that a shiny ornament? BRB. Chapter 17. Aim High. You see a customer eyeing a car at your dealership, and you're unsure if they're going to buy it. You really want them to because you could use the commission and you have a quota to meet. The customer calls you over, acting mildly excited, but clearly trying to wear their best poker face. Let the games begin. You name a price. They begin to walk away. You lower the price. They suggest an even lower one. You start talking about the car's special features, and they pretend like they don't care that much. You say $50,000, the customer says $40,000. You say $49,000, they say $41,000. You make a final offer at $46,000. Fine, I'll pay $52,000, said no buyer ever. That's because when you negotiate, you're unlikely to get exactly what you asked for. And you definitely won't get more than what you asked for. I don't remember the last time I asked a friend to borrow their shirt, and they replied, sure, and here's my cell phone and boyfriend too. I mean, that would be a great friend, don't get me wrong, it's just not that likely. Life is one big negotiation. If I know one thing about bartering, it's that you need to start high. That's because you're never going to get exactly what you want, so you better ask for more than you need. When you go for something you want, there are three possible outcomes: ideal, workable, and horrible. A boss isn't scared to aim for ideal, because a boss knows that at worst, they'll likely end up arriving at a workable scenario. But if you sell yourself short and play it safe, you may end up disappointed. When my friend Humble and I were figuring out how to release our song, IVIVI, which is Roman numerals for 416, which is the area code for the city of Toronto, we knew we wanted it to be epic. Humble had wanted to create a Toronto anthem for a long time, but we'd never gotten around to it because of our busy schedules. One day, as I was staring at the calendar, I noticed that the month of April was approaching. With a twinkle in my eye, I called Humble and told him we needed to release IVIVI on 4/16, and not a day later. I'm pretty sure I made that phone call on April 4th or so, you know, in true last-minute Lily fashion. This deadline forced us to write a song, record it, and plan a music video in less than 2 weeks. See the chapter, Set Deadlines. Writing and recording the song was the easier part. With an assist from a few vodka and sprites, you know, to quote my vocal cords, obviously, we finished the song in a few days and decided to spend the remaining four conceptualizing our music video. So there we were at my kitchen table, trying to think of a creative that could be pulled off in such a short amount of time. Shooting in a car? Easy. Shooting downtown? Easy. Shooting in a studio? Easy. Then suddenly, with complete confidence and a straight face, I said, you know what? We should shoot on the Raptors court inside the ACC. Humble just stared at me, expressionless. The Raptors are Toronto's NBA team, and the ACC, Air Canada Centre, is the city's second biggest stadium, the same stadium that promoters and artists pay thousands and thousands of dollars to use. And there I was, casually suggesting we should shoot our music video there, and in the next 4 days. Humble chuckled and didn't say much, but I could read his mind. It would be next to impossible to get permission to shoot on that court, especially with such short notice and without a hefty check. I didn't want to give up so quickly, and so I made it my personal mission to at least try to make it happen. I contacted every person I knew. Ticket sellers, social media strategists, even YouTube, because YouTube was like my third parent. If I don't know how to do something, I bug them and hope they can hold my hand and teach me. It turned out that YouTube has a relationship with the NBA, and my contact was able to connect me with someone from the Raptors team. Do you hear that? It's the sound of my determined foot slowly prying open a door. I put in my request. We wanted to shoot our music video on the Raptors court. We needed 4 hours. I knew two would be more than enough. We would have 15 people with us. Really, we only needed 10. We were going to use one drone. Okay, this part was true. The paperwork was submitted, and then the waiting game began. The response was that we would have to purchase various types of insurance to shoot inside the stadium. Everything from insurance for ourselves to insurance for the drone. Well, ACC, I see your hand, and I counter with, I think we only need this one insurance. Back and forth we went. Slowly, I was able to get my foot in the door until finally, 2 days later, we'd gotten the approval and were standing outside the ACC. We walked into the arena, set up our equipment at lightning speed, and shot the video in 2 hours with 10 people using one drone. A boss doesn't let anything stop them from aiming high. I ask crazy things of my team all the time, and I won't accept anyone telling me something is unrealistic. Don't give up before you even try. I refuse to believe something can't happen until I'm flat out told no. And to be honest, sometimes even after hearing no, I still don't believe it can't be done. Why? Because I'm relentlessly determined. And you know what? It's worked out great for me so far. It's fine to push for what you want, as long as you're charming and polite about it. If you aim low, you'll end up lower than you intended. That's why you have to aim high. No one else is going to compensate for your lack of ambition. I had the opportunity to shoot a collaboration video with First Lady Michelle Obama about the importance of education around the world. We both lead campaigns promoting education, and so doing a video together made perfect sense. When I confirmed the shoot, I was told I would have 15 minutes with her. I asked for 30. I got 20. I wanted to play a game with her that lasted 3 rounds, so I asked for 5. I got 3. I wanted to become the next president of the United States, and I said so. Everyone laughed. Apparently Canadians can't do that. Whatever. The point is, don't be afraid to ask for things. The worst that will happen is that you'll be told no. Just remember to smile, stand tall, and look as adorable as possible. Now, I'd like you to give this audiobook 10 stars online. 10 complete stars, please. What's that? You think it only deserves 7? Okay, fine. What about 8? You know what? Let's agree on 5. 5 stars will do. Thanks. I'm smiling charmingly. Chapter 18. The Alphabet is a Lie. If you're a parent, you're likely going to hate this chapter. The next few pages go against a lot of the lessons I was taught while growing up, especially those that were drilled into me by my mom and dad. A lot of parents, especially South Asian parents, I say this from experience, are firm believers in having several backup plans when it comes to life. With respect to your career, finances, and even relationships, well, they stress how important it is to have a plan A, plan B, and plan C. Hell, some parents even make it to a plan E. Yes, that's right. A plane. Badoom-tsh. I'm here all night, folks. The idea of a backup plan is ingrained in our minds. If I'm traveling for an event, I pack the outfit I'm going to wear, complete with jewelry and shoes. Done. But then what if for some unforeseen reason that outfit doesn't make sense anymore once I arrive? What if I, like, spontaneously gain 15 pounds on the plane ride because of turbulence or something? I better pack a backup outfit with another pair of shoes and some different jewelry. But then neither of my outfits account for the weather being terrible. What if this one time Miami experiences a blizzard? I better pack a third outfit option that can withstand cold temperatures. Okay, done. Although I never took into account the possibility of meeting someone cute and being asked on a date, I better pack one nice outfit and a razor just to be safe. By the time I leave, I have my clothes in a U-Haul and I'm headed to the airport. Backup plans for days. It's ironic that I'm constantly creating backups but still have yet to set up iCloud. I just don't get it, okay? Well, that's not the point. The point is that regardless of how conditioned we are to create backup plans, I'm going to encourage you to focus only on plan A. In other words, F a plan B. When I made the decision to pursue YouTube full-time, I was in the middle of applying for graduate school. My parents were very keen on me getting my master's degree because they believed it would be something great to fall back on. You know, like a backup plan. So there I was, writing an essay for my application form, attempting to get into the counseling psychology program. Halfway through the essay, I stopped and stared at the screen. I literally felt like I was Harry Potter and Dementors were eating away at my soul. And not even normal Dementors, like Dementors that were on a no-carb diet or like a juice cleanse or something, and today was their cheat day. Basically, Dementors from Los Angeles. I couldn't even get myself to finish the essay because this area of study just didn't excite me. The thought of getting into the program terrified me because I couldn't imagine going to school for 2 more years of my life. At that moment, I slowly got out of my chair, walked to my parents' room. Yes, I lived with my parents during university. I said they were South Asian, remember? I didn't have a choice. And announced that I didn't want to apply for graduate school, but instead wanted to pursue my YouTube career. As you can imagine, this was a terrifying conversation for all of us. I was telling my parents that I didn't want to go to school and obtain a master's degree, but instead wanted to create videos for the internet. Something they didn't even know how to use. For my part, I was excited about my choice, but also extremely scared. At the time, I only had a few videos online and had no idea if my decision was at all realistic. In those days, YouTube wasn't the known platform it is now. Today, digital creators are business owners who have countless opportunities and revenue streams. We are getting recognized as tastemakers and influencers with real and powerful followings. But back in 2010, creating content for YouTube was a strange and unique phenomenon, especially in Toronto. The biggest creators had 2 or 3 million subscribers. Today, people have over 40 million subscribers, and a video of a cat falling will get 3 million views. But in 2010, it was still unclear whether YouTube itself would stand the test of time. Who's to say that YouTube wouldn't go the way of MySpace and disappear? My parents responded in the best way they possibly could. They gave me a year to try out YouTube full-time. If after a year I hadn't made any progress, they wanted me to pursue my master's. With that, I began my 365-day countdown, and YouTube became my main focus. Every day I wrote scripts, recorded videos, edited, watched other creators' videos, and researched marketing ideas. But I lived with a constant feeling of doubt, and a voice in the back of my head kept whispering, "But what if this doesn't work? You should still prepare for graduate school." This carried on for a while until I received a sign from the universe. I was in Montreal for a small hosting gig, and things were running late, so my friends and I were watching TV in our hotel room. Everyone was chatting away, drinking, and doing their own thing, but I was fixated on the television. An interview with Kate Winslet was airing, and the host asked her, "What advice do you have for anyone that wants to act or get into the entertainment industry?" At that moment, it felt as if time slowed down. The entire room went quiet, and no one else was there except for Kate and me. Her answer was, essentially, if you really want to do something, don't have a plan B. Having a plan B means you're expecting your plan A to fail, and that isn't the right attitude. After her last word, I snapped back to reality with new clarity and purpose. I would toss my plan B in the trash and put all my energy and efforts into my plan A. I started treating my career as if it was a guarantee. Instead of having a plan B, which was graduate school, or a plan C, which would be an office job, I developed a plan A 2.0, and a plan A 3.0. YouTube and entertainment were always going to be plan A. The only things I would ever alter were my strategy and technique. When I was hit with obstacles such as low viewership, negative comments, or writer's block, I didn't give up and start considering other career paths. Instead, I strengthened my plan A by learning new ways to market myself, training my mind to deal with hate comments, and creating a creative space to write in. Of course, what I'm suggesting is risky, not to mention terrifying, but if you're willing to work for your dream, lose sleep for it, and give 200% for it, then put all your eggs in one basket and make the basket golden. So, what do you want to do? Who do you want to become? Where do you want to work? Whatever your answer is, make that your plan A, and don't clutter your mind with three other plans that are backups. Your mind, energy, and time need to be united for your plan A to work. I'll end by saying that I'm going to expect from you what all Indian parents expect from their children. And that's no B's, only A's. Get to work. Chapter 19. If you can do it, you don't have to say it. If you tweet about going to hot yoga every day, but no one is around to read it, will you still sweat? Social media has gotten us into the habit of saying things instead of simply doing things. It's even led us to believe that saying something is the same as doing something. Of course, it's easy to convince people that what you say online is actually what you do offline. How would they know any better? You're behind a screen. Maybe you're actually at hot yoga, or maybe you're just in your apartment with the AC turned off and your legs mildly stretched out. But a boss knows that if you can do something, there's no need to say it. Once upon a time, ever so long ago, I went on a date with a very handsome guy. Now, I'm using handsome as a descriptor, not because I'm superficial, although let's be real, it's a nice touch, but because I didn't know too much about him prior to this date. We met at a party and talked for a bit, but we were also drinking dranks, which, by the way, translation for old people means alcoholic beverages. And so we didn't really learn any deep information about each other. We just had the kind of stupid conversation you have while sipping a drink. Or two. Or seven. Okay, whatever, no one was driving. Hashtag bless up UberX. I was excited to learn all about my handsome date, and admittedly, a little nervous. We ordered some drinks and sat across from each other, and I put all my energy into not blushing at the sight of his magnificent face. I asked him about his day, and then he asked me about mine. You know, typical conversation. And then I asked him about work, and he told me all about his career, and his goals, and his gym routine, and the most recent contract he'd signed, and what he was working on next. I sat in silence, listening to him. He told me stories all about how funny he was and how he makes everyone laugh at work. Then, without me asking, he told me all about how he was really a nice guy. In fact, he ended the story with, "And that's just the type of person I am." I knew I wasn't having the best time, but I couldn't pinpoint why. I realized he wasn't asking me very many questions, but I chalked that up to nerves. You know, trying to give people the benefit of the doubt. But even when he did ask me a question here or there, I was still having a 7 out of 10 time on a date that I was expecting to be a 20 out of 10. Okay, fine, that was superficial of me. When I got home, my friend asked me how it went, and I said, "Honestly, I don't know. I had to sit down, take time out of my day, bust out a calculator, open an encyclopedia, and start an intensive research process to determine what it was I hadn't liked about the day. Then I figured it out." He kept telling me about the type of person he was, but he'd done nothing to show me. If you're funny, you shouldn't have to notify people that you're funny. And not to be a jerk, but I didn't laugh once on that date. Yet he told me two different stories about how funny his friends thought he was. If you're nice, you don't have to tell people you're nice. They'll be able to see that. If you're going to talk the talk, then you have to walk the walk. In fact, if you can walk the walk, I really see no need for you to do any talking unless you're specifically asked about the walk you are providing. Less talking, more walking. People often say words lie and actions speak the truth. I used to think that was a great saying, but then I heard a motivational speaker by the name of Trent Shelton say something even better. He said, "Words lie. Actions can lie too. Consistency speaks the truth." And my jaw dropped at the accuracy of these words. Talking about something doesn't make it true. An action is only meaningful if it's consistent. A boss knows that if you want to be taken seriously, you need to show people who you are and then keep showing them. Don't tell your boss you work hard. Let your work prove it. Don't just tell your girlfriend you're loyal. Be loyal. Don't tell your opponent you're going to knock them out. Just knock them out. Talk is cheap, so leave it at the thrift store. Chapter 20. Know the Game. You know what they say. You have to play the game to change the game. But how do you play the game if you don't know the game? You can't. You'd be dribbling a basketball on a tennis court and yelling for a penalty. And if you can't change the game because you can't play the game because you don't know the game, you're definitely not going to win the game. Right now you might be thinking, what game? I'm an accountant. Well, my fellow boss, the reality is that almost everything in life is a game. And game isn't a synonym for something unimportant, nor does it have to give you that icky feeling. Games are great. Most things in life involve strategy, rules, levels, and players. When you're at a bar and hit on a cute girl, that's using strategy in the dating game. When you set yourself apart as an overachieving assistant and get promoted, you pass a level in the office game. When you agree to play hide-and-seek with your baby sister to get out of trouble with your mother, you're playing the game as well. In fact, you're playing two games. Whatever you're doing in life, whether you're a doctor, painter, student, or lemonade stand owner, it's important to know the game so that you can excel at playing it. One of the best ways to do this is to become aware of what everyone else in the same field is doing. Not only does this give you the ability to learn from other people's successes and mistakes, but it also encourages healthy competition, which is necessary for evolution. In addition, knowing the other players in the game can help you adjust your strategy accordingly, just like a coach who studies the formations and plays of an opposing team. Before I went on my first tour, I made it a priority to attend as many shows by fellow digital creators as I could. Of course, I went because I wanted to support my friends, but I also wanted to gain as much knowledge and insight from the experience as possible. Instead of trying to blindly write a creative for my own show, I wanted to see what everyone else was offering first. I took notes on what I loved, what I thought could be improved, how the crowd was reacting, and how long the show was. Was there a dedicated stage manager? How many seats were VIP? Where was security positioned? Were there costume changes? How many? How often? I absorbed all the information around me and used it to develop my own strategy. I wanted to make sure that whatever I offered was not only up to par, but different from what was already out there. If you're trying to set yourself apart, you need to know what has already been done. I also watch YouTube videos when I'm taking a break from work. Yes, when I take a break from making a YouTube video, I watch a YouTube video. Hashtag reasons I'm single. The reason I do this is because I think it's important to be familiar with the content that exists alongside mine. If I'm working on a video called I Like Potatoes, and then I go online and see four other videos called I Like Potatoes, well, that's not great. That is above the recommended daily carbohydrate intake for any viewer. Similarly, I don't want to be creating content on my webcam with mediocre lighting and basic transitions if everyone else on the trending page is using an SLR, ring light, and complicated animations. I want to stay in the league, so I keep up to date on the game. Knowing the game not only helps you play to the best of your ability, but also prevents you from being cheated. Imagine playing a game of poker and not really knowing the rules. You have three sixes and two kings, and your opponent has a pair of fours. After you reveal your cards uncertainly, your opponent notices and confidently claims victory, therefore taking all your chips. You had a full house and didn't know it. You're like the Olsen twins before they were old enough to form memories. Cut it out. Whenever I have to review a contract, I take my time with it. Admittedly, the legal world isn't a game I know completely, and that's why when I'm forced to play, I consult with other players. The best part about the game of life is that we're on so many teams at the same time. There have been many times when I've received a contract and something has seemed off, so I call up a creator friend and ask about their thoughts and experiences. At a different time, I might be playing against these creators in a different game, but in the legal game, they're my allies. In more than one instance, I've discovered that I'd been given incorrect information or, to be blunt, I'd been lied to. But again, it's all a game. The people doing business with me are playing their game, and as a result, I have to play mine. And I will. Recognizing that you're playing a game doesn't just make things more fun. I mean, who doesn't love games? But also helps you understand why people do the things they do, allowing you to react with rationality, not emotion. An agent who sends me a contract that is heavily in their favor isn't necessarily trying to hurt my feelings. They're playing the game. That understanding allows me to respond with my own strategic move instead of with emotion. When a basketball player crosses you over, they aren't trying to break your heart. They're trying to get points to win the game. Similarly, if you're the person who gets crossed over, it's in your best interest to get better, not bitter. Getting better helps your game. Getting bitter does not. Whatever game you're in, strap on some knee pads and get ready to play. Unless your game doesn't impact your knees at all, in which case you just look silly. Us fellow bosses will be cheering you on. Let's play. Chapter 21, Climb the Ladder. Unless you're born into a royal family, chances are you will have to start from the bottom and work your way up in life. If that sentence doesn't apply to you, then hi, Prince Harry. Thanks for buying my audiobook, or, you know, demanding it, whatever. If you want to be the CEO of a company, you might have to start out as a sales rep. If you want to be a director, you might have to get your foot in the door by being a production assistant. If you want to be an actor, you will likely have to fight your way into auditions. Many situations in life require us to climb an invisible ladder, and it's not usually an easy climb. You have to earn each rung. When I first started out on YouTube, I was thirsty for knowledge and wisdom. I lived in Toronto, but most of my peers were living in LA and were inaccessible to me. I was yearning to make meaningful connections with other creators. And so when I discovered that Harley Morenstein from Epic Mealtime, a very big YouTube channel, was in my city, I instantly tweeted him. Truth be told, I wasn't expecting a reply. At the time, I had around 100,000 subscribers, and Harley's following was a lot bigger than mine. But to my surprise, Harley messaged me back and said he'd love to sit down together. He had a meeting, but would message me after. He was staying in a hotel downtown about 30 minutes from my house. I was overjoyed that he responded, and from that point on, I was glued to my phone. Every 4 minutes, I would check my direct messages to ensure I didn't miss anything. Then it occurred to me that Harley had never actually told me what time his meeting was, and so I had no idea when we would meet. What if he finished his meeting and then only had 15 minutes to spare, and I was 30 minutes away? Or even worse, what if he messaged during rush hour, and it took me an hour and a half to get downtown? Those were risks I simply could not take. I texted two of my friends and told them we were going downtown for no reason at all. Like good friends, who also didn't have a choice, they agreed. I spent the entire evening roaming around downtown to ensure I was in close proximity to Harley if he messaged me. As it got later, our roaming was reduced to just sitting in a car parked on the side of the street somewhere downtown. What if he didn't message? Or what if he messaged saying he could no longer make time? These questions were valid, but I continued to sit in the car with my friends, some good music, and a whole lot of faith. Soon enough, my phone pinged, and to my relief, it was Harley saying he had just finished his meetings and was free to meet. Well, would you look at that? I was already downtown. What a coincidence. My two friends and I met Harley and had a great 45-minute conversation with him. He taught me so much about YouTube and brand deals and gave me great advice that has helped shape the career I have today. The guidance I got from Harley that evening gave me the boost I needed to move up from the first rung of the ladder I was on. You could even say that he reached down from several rungs above and gave me a helping hand. I hope that story was motivating, but I realize it might also sound a little stalkerish, which I'm okay with. Harley and I are friends now, and I'm confident he would be okay with me stalking him anytime. This wasn't the only time I did something ridiculous in hopes of establishing a meaningful connection with someone I find inspirational. A few years ago, I was sitting at the airport waiting to board my flight. As soon as they called my zone number, I heard my phone ping. It was a direct message on Twitter. I opened it and instantly lost all chill. The friend I was traveling with thought I was having heart failure because I froze with my jaw dropped. The message was from MIA, only one of the best female rappers ever, and said, "Hey, can we do something?" Casually, MIA messaging me to do something. Extremely frazzled, I got on the plane and responded as quickly as possible before being forced to go into airplane mode. I came up with, "I'd love to. Tell me where and when." I'm so original and funny and social. For the entire plane ride, I was anxious because I had no idea what her reply would be. What if her account had been hacked? What if it was her son? What if she's gotten mixed up and thought I was someone else? Because honestly, people tell me I look like Bruno Mars all the time. When the plane landed, before I did anything else, I checked my messages and squealed when I saw her reply. "Tell me when you're in NYC. Well, as fate would have it, I had a gig in NYC the very next week. I'm not being a stalker and making this up. I actually did have a gig. Perfect. I responded and we agreed to meet up in a few days. I am a fan of MIA's work and really admire what she does, so I didn't want to arrive empty-handed. Over the next week, I arranged for one of my friends to create a custom art piece that I could gift her. The turnaround time was so rushed that I got the piece delivered to the airport before I left for New York City. When I landed in New York, the experience was very similar to my initial meeting with Harley. I knew which day MIA wanted to meet, but I had no other information and was banking on a reply. The day we were supposed to meet, I was leaving my hotel room early in the morning to attend some meetings, and I knew I wouldn't be back until later that night. I hadn't heard from MIA in the last few days, and the whole meeting seemed to be unlikely. Discouraged, I looked at the painting as I exited my room. Well, that was a waste. Then a tiny voice inside my head said, "What if she replies?" That was enough for me to turn around and pick up the painting. It was too large to fit in a bag, so I committed to carrying it under my arm around the city for the entire day, just in case she messaged back. Hours passed, and I was still carrying this annoying thing around. People were staring at me, my friend was making fun of me, and I was beating myself up. I stopped at a curb to sit down and take a break. As a last-ditch effort, I pulled out my phone and messaged MIA, asking what time and where she'd like to meet. Seconds later, she replied and gave me the address of an ice cream shop in Brooklyn. Within the hour, I was eating ice cream with MIA and her son, gift in hand, smile on my face. During our conversation, she taught me so much about the music industry and gave me legal advice that I'd never heard before. The experience helped me climb yet another rung on the ladder. These encounters may seem like minor, ridiculous things, and you might even think that I was devaluing myself by waiting around for people. But the conversations I had were essential and motivated me to continue my work. When you're climbing the ladder, the heaviest piece of clothing you wear is often your pride. In my opinion, waiting hours to meet these two people doesn't mean I don't know my worth. It means I think they're worth my time. Both Harley and MIA knew more than I did, and had knowledge they were willing to graciously share with me. The thing about the ladder is that no matter how high a rung you reach, there will always be people above you. And sometimes the people above you will throw stones at you to try to knock you down. This behavior can be intentional or unintentional. Sometimes they might not even realize their feet are kicking dust onto you. The people above you on the ladder aren't necessarily rich, famous jerks who look down on everyone else. It's not about status. That's the wrong attitude to have. I believe that the people above me on the ladder have more experience and expertise than I do, and I can accept and respect that. Even today, regardless of the fact that I've established myself as a content creator with a large following, I get stones thrown at me from the rungs above. I've done countless collaborations with movie stars and musicians, but when a new one is presented to me, I still have to go to hell and back to make it happen. I'm required to send 3 script ideas, and when the producers don't like any of those, I'm asked to send 3 more by the next morning, as if that's an easy thing to do. Once I get a script approved, I'm told I have 15 minutes to shoot a video that will probably take 60 minutes. The video can only be shot on a day when I'm already completely booked, and so now I have to rearrange my entire schedule. What do I do? I mean, I could reply with a middle finger emoji, but that wouldn't be very productive. I put my pride aside and smile throughout the process, as long as the outcome results in an awesome video I'm proud of. That's climbing the ladder. No one said that some rungs wouldn't be covered in BS. It's a hard ladder to climb. There will be obstacles, exhaustion, and sometimes even a few snakes along the way. Now it's the snakes and ladders game. But when you climb the ladder, you learn lessons, build character, and earn knowledge. The worst thing you can do is act entitled when you're at the bottom of the ladder, refusing to get sweaty. It doesn't work like that. Sometimes to be inspired, successful, or supported, you need to sit in a car on the side of the road for 3 hours. Other times you might have to be that crazy lady carrying a huge painting. Maybe it'll be worth it, or maybe it won't be. Either way, you keep climbing like a boss. Chapter 22, Take the Stairs. We're always trying to look for shortcuts. It's in our nature. I don't have to unlock my phone to take a picture because I can just swipe up. When my GPS can save me 60 seconds on the road, it'll reroute me. Worst case scenario, if I do have to unlock my phone, ugh, annoying, then I can just scan my finger because who has time to input 4 numbers? I don't even have to type a full sentence when texting. BC, abbreviations are V, easy to understand, FYI, and acceptable AFBTW. Who has time to meet new people and establish meaningful relationships? Instead, I can just swipe left or right on your image and let superficial computing do the work. Shortcuts save us time and energy. Let's face it, they're convenient. However, a boss knows that shortcuts do not exist when it comes to success. People often ask me what my secret to success is, and I think they expect me to give them some sort of spell to cast. It would make them feel at ease if I told them how wizardry and a drop of lion's blood got me where I am. That way they could stop having to work hard and instead focus on getting a lion. Unfortunately, that isn't the case, so leave Simba alone. God, hasn't he been through enough? My secret to success is exactly what most people don't want to hear. It's a ton of hard work. There is no escalator to success. You have to take the stairs. Okay, I know, the last chapter was about a ladder, but hear me out. I'm not the product of a viral video. I didn't have a massive hit that got me a ton of subscribers and views that I based my career on. Not that anything is wrong with that. Instead, over the course of my career, every single video has given me recognition and subscribers. If I ask fans how they discovered me, their answers will all be different. With each video I put out, I take a step upward on the staircase to success, leaving a strong foundation of content below me. I don't care if it's a big or small step, as long as the movement is upwards. Having said that, an escalator definitely does exist, especially in my industry. Creating content that puts other people down, using clickbait thumbnails, and promoting misleading video titles are all ways people choose to take an escalator. You'll likely get a lot of views and become really popular, but for how long? Your foundation isn't solid because it was built too quickly or dishonestly. Would you rather travel on a bridge constructed over the course of a year or one that was thrown together in 48 hours? An escalator can go out of service at any time, but the stairs are always there. How many times have you heard a hit song from someone and then never heard of them again? Or how many times have you seen a viral video of someone doing something absolutely disgusting and then never seen their face again? Escalators exist in every industry, but a boss will always take the stairs and prioritize the longevity of their career. Gimmicks and shortcuts aren't the best materials to build with. All it takes is one strong wind to knock it all down. It's absolutely exhausting to climb the stairs. especially because you can't always see the top of the staircase. It just seems like a never-ending ascent. As a result, even when people are told that the stairs are the only way to success, they will still try to create a shortcut. What if I hire Optimus Prime to carry me up the stairs? What if I buy the staircase? Okay, what if I tell people that receiving piggybacks is part of my religion? Or what if this map is inaccurate to begin with and there's a faster path through the mountains? Hear me when I say you must start climbing and do the work. No ifs, ands, or buts. Remember all those times you had a major project to finish and you just stared at it thinking, what if I get a doctor's note? All right, great. You faked a stomach ache and got a note. Now what? You still have to do the assignment. Then you think, maybe I'll just copy off my friend. Your teacher caught you and now you have to do the assignment again. No matter how many times you stare at this project, it's not going anywhere. Why? Because you just need to buckle down and do the work. There is no other way, so stop wasting time convincing yourself there is. I know that deep down inside you know this. Just like how I know that Googling how to get nice abs without working out is never going to be productive. The answer is to eat right and work out. No matter how many juices I drink or electronic devices I strap to my stomach, I will not get nice abs. Similarly, no matter how many gimmicks or shortcuts you try, you won't succeed unless you do the work. It's important to note that there's a huge difference between taking the stairs and being inefficient. While climbing the stairs, I do many things that save me time. Let me give you an example. Task. I have an amazing video idea that is going to require a lot of work. Taking an escalator. I'll just do an easier video and make it look cool in the thumbnail. Taking the stairs with efficiency. Let me put time and effort into assembling a team that will help me execute this great idea. That way I can focus on being in the video while all the paperwork and other details are handled by someone else. You might be yelling right now saying, well, Lily, not everyone has an assistant and team to help them out. Well, yeah, I didn't have an assistant or team at the bottom of the staircase either. I was only able to hire a team after climbing the stairs solo for years. Working hard feels good. Of course it's exhausting and stressful and causes you to miss a party or two, but at the end of the day, it is so rewarding. One of the best feelings in the world is when you know that luck didn't play a role in your success. Doing work eliminates the need for luck. I'm not lucky. I just took the stairs. And you should too. I told you this wasn't going to be a fairy tale. There is no magic carpet or genie. There's just you and a staircase. So start stretching and take the first step. With everything else, feel free to use shortcuts. Okay, G2G, please keep listening for more LOLs. I-L-Y! Chapter 23, Set Deadlines. Remember that scene from 300, where Leonidas is getting pierced with arrows from every direction, but he continues attacking his enemy until his last breath? It's stressful and painful to watch as he swings his sword with aggression and purpose. Deep down, you know that it's the end, but his persistence gives you a little shred of hope. That's what I looked like in high school the night before a major project was due. I had 3 weeks to get this 20-page essay done, but lo and behold, there I was at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, guzzling down my third can of Coke. I tried to write the essay the previous Sunday, but I couldn't find a comfortable enough pen to create an outline, so I had to go supply shopping. A few days later, I tried again, but it turned out my desk was too messy to work on, so I had to clean my room, and the basement, and mow the lawn, and for the first time in my life, do my laundry. Yeah, and I mean, like, the day before, I had been committed to doing this essay, but I sneezed a few times, and I decided to just take it easy and watch some medicinal TV instead. Procrastination is a hustler's worst enemy. It's that little voice inside us that craves instant gratification and convinces us that almost anything can be put off for later, no matter how unrealistic. As a result, you will wait until the last possible minute to start your assignment, leave your house for a meeting, or change your car's oil. In most cases, you'll get the task done somehow, some way. Maybe it wasn't done to the best of your ability, but you probably still got it done. Now imagine how powerful procrastination would be if you had absolutely no deadline at all. Completing the work was merely good for you. You would be 72 years old and in an old folks' home trying to finish your math homework from the 10th grade. And even then you would convince yourself that your wheelchair wasn't comfortable enough and so you'd get to that homework later. Throughout most of my life, deadlines were put in place for me because someone else was in charge. A professor, my parents, or my boss. When I decided to take control of my own life and become an entrepreneur, no one was around to tell me what to do and when to do it. With that reality came a beautiful freedom, and with that freedom came the possibility of making bad choices. If it was a random Monday and I wanted to sleep the entire day, no one was going to stop me. I quickly learned that I had to be my own boss and set deadlines for myself, or I would go nowhere fast. I created a schedule that required me to upload a video on my channel every Monday and Thursday. The CEO of YouTube isn't ever going to write me up if I don't deliver. The only person I have to answer to is me. This upload schedule prevents me from overthinking and procrastinating and prompts me to get things done. It's a major reason for my success. As you can imagine, creating deadlines takes a huge amount of self-control, and that's why sometimes you have to force them upon yourself. For years, I would tell myself that one day I'd move to Los Angeles. But the comfort of home and tediousness of obtaining legal documentation caused me to put off that move. One month, I blamed the delay on a family vacation. Another month, I was sick. The month after that was my birthday, and well, apparently it takes me 30 days to plan a party. Finally, during one business trip to LA, I decided to take a step forward and go apartment hunting. I scoped out about 5 or 6 places and conveniently disliked them all. Yet again, I had to delay my plan. At this point, setting a deadline in my mind wasn't enough to make things happen. I needed to force myself to make the move, so I sent an email out to my team that said on December 1st, I would be moving to LA. That was in 4 months. I called my insurance company and told them to cancel my car insurance effective December 1st. I did the same with my cell phone provider. I created a situation in which I wouldn't be able to function in Toronto on December 2nd, thus forcing me to move before that date. 1 month prior to moving, I still didn't have an apartment in LA. I told myself that no matter what, on December 1st, I would move. If that meant staying at a hotel with all my boxes, then so be it. That would be my own fault. 2 weeks prior to moving, I had some business in Los Angeles, so I made one last attempt at finding an apartment. 1, 2, 3 down and no luck. Hotel it is. However, the very last apartment I looked at, 2 weeks before moving, hours before heading back to Toronto, was perfect. It was a little more expensive than I was hoping for, but my deadline didn't allow me to overthink. Within 24 hours, I signed the lease. A few days later, I ordered furniture. A few days after that, I had a going-away party. That night, I packed all my stuff, and the next morning, I moved to Los Angeles. This is an extreme example of deadline setting, and I'd be lying if I said it wasn't absolutely terrifying to not have an apartment 2 weeks prior to moving. However, the lesson I learned is one that has helped me throughout my career. Force deadlines. Sometimes I find myself sitting on a video idea for way too long. I'll come up with a great concept that cannot be executed in one day, and so I'll hold on to it with the hope that I'll have more free time later. I won't. I never do. Instead, I now confirm a shoot date and hire an entire crew even before I have a script or confirmed actors. Writing a date on my calendar and setting a deadline forces me to find the time to get my act together. When I want to collaborate with other creators, I do the same thing. I'll confirm a date for us to shoot, and I'll have absolutely no idea what the creative is until the night before. It's stressful and sometimes a bit overwhelming, but it always gets done. Every single time. For larger projects or goals, such as open my own restaurant or write a movie script, it's harder to set just one deadline. Instead, it may be smarter to break the goal down into pieces and assign each of those pieces a specific deadline. For example, instead of saying you're going to write a movie script, break your goal down into smaller, more manageable pieces, such as create a logline, or finish character outline, or even still, create a mood board. If you need to force yourself to stick to those deadlines, set meetings with partners or friends, and commit to sharing your ideas with them on a certain date. Deadlines are always easier to follow when they're public and you're held accountable for them. This is why I publicly promote my video schedule. If Monday and Thursday uploads were my little secret, then my week would simply never have a Monday or Thursday. I would practice a 5-day week. The moon would just have to adjust accordingly. Think of something you've been wanting to do for a long time but have never gotten around to. I want you to take a second and look deep inside yourself. Do you really want to accomplish this task? Are you willing to work your absolute hardest for it? Are you willing to acknowledge that your hardest isn't your hardest and then work even harder than that? If the answer is yes, grab a calendar and set a deadline. Can't think of anything? Well, let me help you out. You will finish listening to this audiobook by... fill in the blank. The clock is ticking. Chapter 24. Don't be made, don't be broken. You're taking a major test, applying for a job, auditioning for a movie, starting a sales pitch, or making a presentation to your entire school. Whatever it is, you're about to do something important.